It's the California Wine Country Podcast with Steve Jackson and Dan Berger. We taste, we laugh, we learn.
Time for California Wine Country, brought to you by Bottle Barn. Today it's Tom Simino and the amazing Mary Edwards from Mary Edwards Winery. Also Heidi Vondermaiden is the winemaker at Mary Edwards. How's Ken Coopersmith? We love when you guys come in.
Oh, he's doing well.
He's busy, I bet.
Yes, he is busy.
Of course he is. Tom, talk about Mary Edwards, because she's iconic.
Yes, well, I think the world is a better place because Mary Edwards is in it.
Amen.
Number one. And, you know, I was thinking about the how long ago I met Mary, and I think it was when you were making Merlot at Matanzas Creek when I first ran into you
at a
tasting. I was kind of going back thinking again. It seems like, you know, when you think about how many years wine has been, you know, they've been growing grapes in Europe. They've been making wine for centuries and a couple, 3,000 years. Here in the United States, like the last 50 years, like if you go to the early 70s to now, that's like 50 years, and that's like the golden age of California wine. And, you know, when you think about what was going with the 76 tasting, and everybody's coming up with cold fermentations and cleanliness in the wineries, and then phylloxera, we replanted everything. And your background at UC Davis, you have – I don't think people really understand that some of the innovations that you came up with. Could you maybe tell a little bit of us about that?
Well, of course, some of my old professors would have considered me to be a troublemaker.
Good.
So I think one of the things that I am known for is so the reason there are no longer any lead capsules on wine bottles is because of my research. So my master's research was funded by the Wine Institute, and they did not expect that I would find that lead was getting into wine.
Wow.
And so they gave me this grant to do the work, and then when I came up with the results, and I was working with Dr. Maynard Amerine, so no slouch there, they're like, this can't be published. This is just a game changer, because all the capsules in the world were made out of lead. So they suppressed my research for an entire year, and finally Dr. Amerine said, because I couldn't finish my thesis. That was my thesis.
Whoa, yes.
So I couldn't get my master's degree.
They suppressed your research. What kind of crap is that?
Anyway, isn't that something?
So it's funny because I was giving a talk at the Wine Institute, at a Wine Institute breakfast recently, and somebody asked me about that story, and I was like, that's just the fact. This is what happened.
That sounds thuggish to me.
And so, yeah, how about that?
And so finally, and I also did the work with the head of the food science department. So it was like these two major heads of departments are like going, you've got to publish this work. And so finally they did, and that's why there are no longer any lead capsules. So that's something I'm known for. And then also probably for my work with clonal research, which – people in this country really didn't think was that important when the French started doing all this work way back in the 70s. And I went over there and started looking into it because I was working with Dr. Omo at Davis, and came back to the university after I graduated saying, what is this thing about clones? And he's like, no one was showed any interest in this at all. And he couldn't get any funding for it at Davis. So he was very keen to get me started on the road of, you know.
And what year was this?
That would have been, 77, I believe, is when I went to France to look into this. And he set me up and visited the research station at Dijon and all that stuff. And then I was kind of like, oh, my God, why doesn't anybody in America talk about this or know about it? And so I came back all revved up, you know, and everyone's like, no, it's all about the dirt. I'm like, no, it's about the dirt, but it's about the clones, you know. And so that started, you know. Actually, that's when I went to work for Matanzas Creek, and then we planted a 5-clone Chardonnay vineyard there on their property in Bennett Valley.
And that was the $30 Chardonnay that everybody thought was like so overpriced. Was it Journey or what was it?
No.
What was that called? What was
that? So the Merlot went for $70. What was the I can't even remember.
Yeah, I think the Chardonnay was about half price.
It was like really expensive.
Yeah, and everybody went, oh, my God, nobody's going to pay that much for a Chardonnay.
Yeah. Anyway, so that was another thing. And I got involved with Carneros Creek. They did a lot of work with clones, research, and Simi, Zelma Long, when she was winemaker there. And, you know, it's like.
So this whole clonal thing is your fault?
Well, I'm not, you know, I just kind of was the one who brought it back to California and said, wake up. And people thought I was just, no. Until we gave our first, so Dr. Olmo and I gave the first class, an extension class on the Davis campus. Once those clones we planted at Matanzas Creek grew up that we could make the wine. So that was like in, I forget, it was like 81 vintage or something like that. Mm-hmm. And we presented them and I was like, oh, well. And then I was doing a lot of consulting, and so I did what I called my clonal tours. I took people, okay, here's this clone planted in, you know, Anderson Valley and planted in Alexander Valley and planted in Russian River. And yes, there is, you know, that clone has a keeping personality.
A flavor.
You know? Mm-hmm. So anyway, so that's something I was, you know.
She's being so modest. You know, I mean clones are like so common these days. They're, yeah. And you're a Pinot, you're the Pinot gal in my mind, and how many, the propensity for the different clones in Pinot Noir, it's unbelievable, is it not?
And then I actually took some budwood from Mount Eden back in 75. Sounds like so long ago, right?
Well, it was.
And I was like, well, this Pinot seems really special, you know. So I took it but I knew the vineyard had virus, so I took it to Davis and ran it through the virus FPMS, cleanup program. Yeah. And but I couldn't afford, I didn't have a vineyard. I didn't have a vineyard for the first 25 years I was a winemaker. I couldn't afford to buy vineyard property, vineyard land. And so then when we started the Mary Edwards brand, and we bought the first land. We planted. I went to Davis and said, I'd like to get some of that, you know, they called it UCD 37. They're like, oh, no, it's all sold. They go, well, but I'm the one who gave you the bud. Oh, you're the one who gave us the budwood. And so then they gave me all, I forget, enough to do a few hundred vines. And then we started propagating.
From
it.
There, yeah.
The winemaker for Mary Edwards Winery, Heidi Vandermaiden, a nice Italian name.
My mother would agree, since she's full-blooded Italian.
Oh, cool.
But there weren't very many Italian names that went with Vandermaiden, hence the Heidi.
So, as winemaker, I mean, well, give us your background. How did you get into the wine world?
It was my dad's idea. I have a degree in chemistry and didn't know what I wanted to do with it. And my dad said, well, you live in Sonoma County. Why don't you try the wine industry? And I thought, well, all right, I'll try it out. I needed a job. So I became the harvest lab tech at Kenwood. Loved it. And I worked my way up there to enologist. And from there, I went to Moritzen as assistant winemaker. And then to Arrowwood to work with Richard Arrowwood.
Wow. We love him. He's great.
He is. He's
Did
wonderful.
You go to Davis?
Or? No, I have a degree from Santa Clara University.
Oh, okay. They have a big wine program there?
No, it's chemistry.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
You know, chemistry, wine chemistry. You know.
Yeah. Mary, explain how important the chemistry part of winemaking is.
So I say we like to have it all, right? We want to have all the chemistry, knowledge, and tools. But we also use our senses just as importantly. But you need both, because translating, you know, how do you translate to somebody, especially when you're trying to pass along your legacy, how you've made the wine, your style, if you don't have some numbers or something you can grab onto. So we have quite an extensive laboratory at the winery because we really believe in science, and we've done a lot of work with UC Davis in terms of our phenolics. We have a whole phenolics lab we've developed, which has not been inexpensive, but we really feel it's worthwhile, and we can really track the development of tannin, color, and all the important things for Pinot in the lab. So we like both, though. I mean, we spent all morning tasting this morning actually went into the afternoon. So we're, it's not, it's, we want it all. My dad was an engineer. My mom was an artist. I feel like it takes both sides of your brain.
There you go.
You know,
I always kind of come up with the it's science, it's art, and then it's also magic.
And luck.
There's a little bit of luck.
Involved.
Well, there's all, you know.
That's why I felt about, you know, when I started the Mary Edwards brand, it was like just on the cusp of when Pinot in America was becoming, you know, starting its ascent.
Climb. Yeah.
And, you know, people always had this thing about, oh, you know, it's all about sideways, and that's how Pinot got to be well known.
Reason
sideways was a result of the increasing popularity of Pinot. And if you looked at the development of Pinot on wine lists and the popularity, then it was after it was already in the ascent when that nobody's going to do a film about something nobody cares about.
Nobody cares about, right?
So
yeah, but that damn movie screwed up Merlot.
Well, it put the nail in the coffin.
It didn't need a movie to screw it up.
Really? But it's
wait a minute now. You were Matanzas Creek.
So the I best, know.
But it made a comeback. Hasn't Merlot made a comeback in some ways?
I don't know. Do you think so, Heidi?
I don't know if it has market-wise. There's definitely some lovely, beautiful Merlots being made out there.
Yeah.
But
isn't
I don't think it has the same.
Isn't it the selling wine in the country, though, Merlot? I think so.
Chardonnay's one, right?
No, red wine. I'm sorry.
Oh, red wine.
Red wine. I think it is.
Well, you know, there's a lot of wine made in the Central Valley.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
There's a lot of $8 bottles of wine out there.
I don't know. Yeah.
You know, we're up here in Sonoma County where we're lucky and we're sitting here with some of these beautiful wines. Should we talk about the Sauv Blanc that we've got open, Jackson?
Yes, please. It's a 17 Russian River Sauvignon Blanc from Mary Edwards Winery. I love the nose.
Yeah. The aromatics are just fantastic.
They really are.
Now, does this see any oak? Is it all neutral oak that's with this, or is there?
It's
Heidi, 100. You want to answer that?
Yes, it's 100% barrel fermented, and about maybe 18% new oak. So it's a labor of love, I would say.
So stirring the lees on the neutral barrels—that's where you're getting the creaminess.
Yep,
twice a week.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Wonderful stuff.
And it also stays in barrel for 6 months. So it's stirred for 6 months, which
Jeez.
Is so when everybody else is bottling their wine in, you know, the November, December time frame after harvest for tank fermented Sauvignon Blanc, we're just stirring away.
Right.
You know, and then we don't even bottle till the following April, and then we don't release it till September, October. So,
right. So
we
it's
actually
not
give
like
it 6 months in bottle too, which is like, oh my, you know, it's just not normal.
People are getting ready to sell their next vintage
right.
when you're
yeah.
just releasing the
right.
last one.
Right.
Would
yeah.
you
right.
lay this down, or does Sauvignon Blanc not necessarily need to be laid down?
Well, my feeling is that Sauvignon Blanc ages, well, this kind of Sauvignon Blanc, this style, ages really quite well. You know, a lot of writers maybe haven't had this style, and they're thinking about, you know, a screw cap Sauvignon Blanc that was made in tank. Of course it's not going to age, but these wines age very well. We had a party, what was it? Was it a Christmas before last where we...
Yeah, I think it was 2 years ago when you did the vertical.
Well, also we did... I said to our staff, okay, you can request what wines do you want to taste from
too.
The library? And they chose... This is 2 years ago. They chose the 2007...
Sauv Blanc.
Sauv Blanc.
Wow.
And it was great. People
really?
Loved it. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
See, a lot of people don't understand, you know, the old Dan Berger, lay it down, Dan. But there is truth to time in the bottle. There's no substitute for time in the bottle. And your Pinots certainly do very well. But a 2007 Sauvignon Blanc, that's kind of eye-opening.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it sure is. But I mean, you know, when you taste this one.
Yeah, talk about the taste.
It's got these wonderful aromatics. And this is that Clone Musquet. Some of this is Clone Musquet.
It's a third. It's a third Clone Musquet and then two-thirds of the Shenandoah Clone or Clone 1, the most ubiquitous Sauvignon Blanc clone in the world.
And this is all Russian River?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's cool region, but it has that the creaminess from that lees stirring is really something, because this doesn't have, it has a little bit of that grapefruit and it has some little bit of tropical character to it, but I'm not getting any of the grassy gooseberry thing that, you know, a lot of people go like...
Pecat Pete?
Yeah, with Sauvignon Blanc. You know, people that hate Sauvignon Blanc go, oh, I don't like that green character. This is more rich and round and
so
food
the thing,
friendly.
The thing is interesting when you say to somebody at a tasting or something or one of the dinners we do, they'll say, oh, well, I don't really like Sauvignon Blanc. And I always say, just take one sip. Just take one sip, because what they're not used to is Sauvignon Blanc with body,
mm-hmm.
with texture. They think of Sauvignon Blanc as being thin, watery.
Acidic.
Very acidic. And they're like, oh, this is Sauvignon Blanc. We got Sauvignon Blanc. So,
you'd almost think that this has a Semillon in it. You know what I mean? The creaminess
That's the Mousquet.
Ah.
The Mousquet is a very rich clone and adds a lot of texture and body.
Yeah, the texture of this wine is beautiful.
Thank you.
And this is a 17.
Yes.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's the price on this?
$36.
And I'll bet you it's a Bottle Barn. We don't have Barry here today.
No,
apparently
it's not.
Well, that's my next question. But yeah, as far as purchasing Mary Edwards wines, is it pretty much at the winery and online? Are you in any retail?
So it's online, in the tasting room. You can drive over to the winery in Sebastopol and pick up a bottle. We sell to some stores in California, but
Should be in Bottle Barn, for Christ's sake.
the stores that buy our wine in California pay full retail. So it means that they're because we don't want to compete with our own website and our tasting room, which is how we survive, right? We've been profitable for 22 years because we have a good mix of distribution, international and direct to consumer sales.
Tell everyone where the winery and tasting room are.
Sebastopol, at the corner of Grayton and Highway 116.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So it's near the famous Underwood restaurant in Grayton.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful facility.
You have a tasting at our place and then go to Underwood for lunch.
Love Underwood.
It's so great, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And is it 6-7 days a week? Do you need an appointment?
So we're open 7 days a week. And we are if you make an appointment, it's very nice because you get a more full array of wines. You get a private tasting in a room with your own group. You're not mixed with another group. Mm-hmm. You can walk in and hopefully they'll find room for you. But appointments are nice because you get a richer experience.
Sure. Makes sense.
And it's Mary, M-E-R-R-Y.
Yes, thank you, Tom. I wanted to make sure everyone knew that. It's M-E-R-R-Y, MaryEdwards.com. Mary Edwards herself is here with Tom Simino and the winemaker at Mary Edwards Winery. How long have you been there now?
4.5 years.
Nice. Heidi Vandermaiden is with us. Mary, talk about the beginnings of Mary Edwards Winery.
Oh, you want to talk about the party on the beach in Hawaii?
Sure, why not?
So,
well, wait a minute. Can we say that over the radio here?
Yeah, I think we can. So, I had some friends people I met who became good friends back at one of those little parties you were talking about, little release parties we had at Batanzas Creek, and they decided to start a little fan club. And their idea was they have a huge garden in Sebastopol, and they love to cook. And their idea was that every year from then on we should get together and everyone should drink everything I ever made. Well, of course, as time goes on, that's a lot of wine, right? So in 1997, they decided so my friend is from Hawaii, and her grandmother has been there for many, many years, and there's a whole story with that. But anyway, so they said, let's go to Hawaii. And they grow all their own meat and everything, too. So we ship frozen boxes of meat. We ship over all this wine. We're just going to go to Hawaii for a week. And, you know, in Hawaii, you don't get hangovers, so we can drink as much as we want.
That's what I've heard, yeah.
Yeah.
It's illegal to have hangovers there.
And so, you know, every night we just made these great meals and, you know, drank more wine. And there was a fellow with the group whose name was Bill Burke, who was a investor in Chalone and in Ravenswood. And he's like, what are you going to do? Because at that point I was consulting full time. He's like, what
year
are you going to do? 97.
Okay.
So I said, well, you know, I'm a divorced mother with two little boys, and I'm just, you know, I have a piece of land, but I'm just keeping it together for the family. And he said, but, you know, you ought to, what about you? What are you going to do for yourself? And like, I don't know. You know, we're just drinking on the beach and stuff. And so we get back to California, and he calls me on the phone and says, let's do something. He was also an attorney. He says, you want to do something? And I said, well, he said, we should start something. And I said, well, you know, I don't have a whole lot of time to, like, I got these two little boys. I got, you know, all this stuff. And because we can just feed me the data. I have a friend with a program. We can just plug all this stuff in and come up with this pro forma offering. We could do a California corporation and start this winery. And I'm like, okay. So that's how it started. And meanwhile, that same summer was my 50th birthday. And so I went with a good friend down the Colorado River on a float trip for almost 2 weeks and met my future husband, who is Ken Coopersmith, who eventually I brought back to, you know, California. And he became my partner in the winery, or one of my partners. And so then I had this piece of land I'd purchased in 1996. And so
And this is Russian River, where the land is. Yeah.
Yeah. Out in the Sebastopol Hills.
Yeah.
And so we formed a little partnership to gain the seed money to be able to go to the bank to get real financing, to be able to plant the vineyard, and then, you know, start the ball rolling with, you know, buying grapes and buying barrels. And so the first harvest was made from Bob Pellegrini, sold me, like, I forget, 4 or 5 tons of all of that lean Pinot, which was like, oh, this is awesome. And I just basically begged from different people that I knew in the area little bits. But we ended up making the first year 2,200 cases, which was like, wow, this is a lot of wine, you know. It's a lot of wine.
Especially having to sell it.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. That's where people fall down. It's like, that's why marrying a salesman is really a good idea if you're in the wine business. So.
And you were making that wine on Olivet Lane, right, at the facility over there?
No. So first I started off making the wine at one of my clients' places, which was Lambert Bridge. And I also, I mean, I was like the gypsy winemaker, made it at Michelle Schlumberger, at all these different properties, you know, Lambert Bridge. Eventually, I helped Bob Pellegrini build Olivet Lane Winery, and so then I made wine there. But I made wine at Taft Street, you know, I made it Motion, just, you know. And finally, we built the winery starting in 2006 and crushed there in 2007, opened to the public in 2008. But for a long time, we were, you know, offices at home, we were in the Sonoma Vintners Co-op was where our storage facility was, and our offices were for a while, and, you know, just you know, bootstrap along. Startup.
Yeah.
Startup.
Quite successful. How many cases now is Mary Edwards?
We're a little over 30,000 cases.
Wow.
From 2000.
How much of that is direct?
About, so financially, so the income is about half.
Wow.
Half from direct. Yeah.
And again, it's at it's in Greaton officially.
So, well, it's
at Greaton at 116.
It's at the Greaton Fry Cross where it crosses Highway 116. So, the town of Greaton, although our address is Sebastopol, but it's just
north. You can't miss it off of 116.
We got a big old sign.
Yeah,
out there.
You can't miss it.
Yeah,
7 days a week for the tasting room.
Yeah, you get your mushrooms next door when you know on Fridays they Gourmet Mushroom sells mushrooms.
Oh, yeah.
So you can do both. Get Pinot and mushrooms.
And then go to dinner for
Underwood. Speaking of things that you can buy other than just wine and now mushrooms, we're sipping the Booker Pinot Noir right here. And we know the Bookers because they're the farmers that have all the cows and the milk and the cheese.
They were in not too long ago.
The waste is the Booker Gold.
Right.
Right?
Right.
The manure. That I buy every year.
That was fascinating when they were in.
So, yes. John, if you're out there listening, I love your Booker Gold. I'll be coming for another truckload.
This is a 2016 Russian River Pinot from Booker.
From Booker on West Side Road.
What am I getting in the nose here? It's lovely.
The cherries and, first of all, let's talk about the color. Because we were talking about color. I don't think people take enough notice of color. And we were talking off air about how beautiful this wine is. I mean, is that perfectly ruby red?
So that's a garnet.
There we go.
It's much darker than
garnet.
You know? Oh, my goodness. It's so bright and fresh. Heidi, tell us a little bit about this wine.
Well, it's almost 50-50 of Mary's clone UCD37 that she was telling us about earlier, and the Pommard clone. So Hillside Vineyard. John does a great job farming these vines, and we're very lucky to get them. And it's the first vineyard that we pick every year.
Uh-huh.
The first one to ripen, probably because it has such shallow soils on the hillside and then up north also. So Mary once told me that she agonizes over the first pick of the year. And I thought, wow, even with all of her experience, she agonizes just like I do. And now I get to agonize over the first pick of the year because this is my this is my baby.
Yeah. And, you know, you've done a great job. So this is the first one that you made after you became the winemaker from grape to glass.
Correct.
Basically.
Correct.
And it's stunning. When was this released?
This is the 16.
So
it was a year ago.
Spring a year ago.
Mm. So like April of 18.
18, yeah.
It's mouthwatering. It's rich. It's got texture, good acidity, very well balanced. It's cherries, but it's also, it's dark cherries. So it's got some kind of almost leaning on the black side of the dark side of red, you know, like as opposed to the strawberry, raspberry kind of thing. Maybe even a little plum. I just think, what do you think, Jackson? You like this?
Yeah.
This is a beautiful wine.
Wonderful.
What's the price on this guy?
I think it's 66.
Is it?
Okay.
I can't remember either.
You can look at the website.
You'll have to stop by and pick it up.
This dessert wine, the sweet wine. It was your sweet wine
Wine pick of the year this year. And this is the Sauvignon Blanc Late Harvest. And it's the 14 vintage. And you were talking about how you only make that in certain years because the difficulty in leaving the grapes on the vine to get to 40 degrees Brix and all.
Yeah.
Usually you pick, you know, Sauvignon Blanc at 23.5, 24.
It's picked like in late October, early November.
Right.
It's pretty scary.
Right. Well, we're not going to.
We're short on time today because I have a meeting.
Okay. So shall we shift right to the
sweet one?
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Shall we? Okay.
It is Mary Edwards, M-E-R-R-Y, MaryEdwards.com. Iconic winemaker and winery in wine country for so long. Heidi Vondermaiden is the winemaker. She's with us as well. When are you back, Tom?
I'll be back next month.
Okay.
Did two shows this month because you asked me to.
Yeah, well, we don't know.
Dan was away at some point.
We'll give him this.
And I've been trying to get Mary on the show, and when she had this date open, I said, okay, well, I'll be back twice this month, and here we are. It'll be toward the end of July that I'll come back, and I haven't put that show together just yet. Look at the color on this beauty. Now, so, late harvest.
Made of what?
Sauvignon Blanc. Tell us how you make this wine.
So, this is made from only the Sauvignon Muscat clone of Sauvignon Blanc.
And how sweet is it?
This has, I believe, 13.5% residual sugar.
That's a lot,
right? Yes. Mm-hmm.
But tasting it, you'll notice that it's not cloying at all because it has really good acidity, which is really important with a late harvest to keep it. So it's made very much like the French process, the passerage, where you actually you're drying the grapes on the vine. So we cut off more than half the fruit in order to ensure that the grapes will actually ripen, because ripening a full harvest would be almost impossible.
To get it to that high sugar.
In where we are, and it's difficult in Russian River, it's not that dry. So we take off half the fruit, we net the vines very tightly, and then we go in once a week, lift up the netting, take off any imperfect fruit, re-net, and we actually get to about 26 degrees Brix, then we cut the canes where you would make the wintertime pruning cuts. So now the canes are just hanging on
with the grapes on them?
With the grapes on them. They're just hanging there. And they're just drying. But it takes them, it's amazing how long it takes for them to dry. So like a month later, you're actually able to get them up into the 38
Interesting.
To 40 degree range.
Well, it's MaryEdwards.com, M-E-R-R-Y, as I say, iconic winemaker and winery. And Heidi Vondermaiden, the winemaker with Mary Edwards there. Just spectacular stuff, and has been for so long.
And, you know, this, you know, a lot of people kind of, they don't really think about late harvest wines. This is dessert all by itself. You know, a little bit of fruit maybe on the side or some cheese, you know, right
after
dinner.
I say never serve it with its chocolate. It'd be like sweet, sweet. So something fruity like a quiche or any kind of fruit or like you say, even fresh fruit.
Yeah. This is it's the honeys and apricots and all kinds of things going on here.
Yeah, so you have some botrytis in there. You have the wine character. You have the muscat. And then interlaced with that is a small amount of botrytis, like maybe 25% of the fruit is botrytized. Pure botrytis. And so that's what makes it so honey-like. Yeah.
And a little bit of pear. This is really, really sweet.
Well, it was Tom's sweet wine of the year.
Yeah, that's why I liked it. And I still do. I may have to grab this baby and take it home.
Mary, Heidi, always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Good to see you again.
Thank you.
Good to meet you, Heidi.
Very nice to meet you.
And Tom, we'll see you in July.
You bet.
All right. California Wine Country, brought to you by Bottle Barn. Thanks.